Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Welcome to another Britflix.com podcast. My name's Stuart Wright, and today's guest is a returning guest. Welcome to the show, Liam Regan.
Hi, Stuart. Thank you so much. It's great to be back.
It is. Only 7 years between the last time we spoke. This was organised prior to FrightFest 2022 being announced, and now the date's arrived for us to talk. We can include in this conversation the fact that you'll be world premiering your new movie, Eating Miss Campbell.
That is correct. Yes, the prodigal son returns to FrightFest.
So before we get into what we're going to go, we're going to do five great trauma movies with Liam. But before we do, do you want to tell the listener what Eating Miss Campbell's all about?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, Eating Miss Campbell is about a vegan goth student who falls in love with her English teacher and develops a taste for human flesh. It also satires many social issues today and controversies like school shootings, veganism, self-harm, suicide, and date rape pills. So it's a black comedy, and also it's produced by Lloyd Kaufman, so it's got traumatic tendencies. It's also a sequel to my first film, My Bloody Banjo, because that film didn't really do any business whatsoever. So I guess the only way I could make a banjo too was self-financing it myself. So it's kind of like the past 7 years of my brain thrown to the wall and splattered into mush. So I hope people will like it, because I think it's an improvement from Banjo. Like when I was speaking to you about Banjo as a very naive young boy, I think I was only like 29, maybe 30. And now I'm 37, and I feel like the one thing that they don't teach you is what happens after the film festival circuit. Now, I signed a really bad distribution deal for Banjo, and the film got censored in America. They changed the title, obviously, to My Bloody Banjo, because Banjo doesn't sound like a horror film. And, I've not seen any pennies for the film. So I had to buy back my own UK rights. Laurie Brewster of Hex Media negotiated a deal. I had to actually buy back my UK rights. And now we recut it, and we're going to put it out on Blu-ray, self-distribution.
When you say we, who's the we going to put it out?
Oh, sorry, me. So I'm going to start my own distribution label called Refuse Films. So I'm taking advantage of like the whole boutique Blu-ray kind of phenomenon that's happening. I'm a big fan of like Arrow Video, Vinegar Syndrome, and Severin, and so I'm getting the discs factory pressed. So it's not going to be like BDRs or anything. It's going to be professionally done. Nice cover artwork by Graham Humphreys. We're going to do like fulfillment with Amazon and HMV, as well as like on the website too. We just got to go through like the BBFC certification process. So I reckon it'll be an 18 because the BBFC these days, they only really care about sexual violence, I think. And I mean, we've got genital mutilation in there, but hey, Lars von Trier did it, right? And Lars von Trier got away with it. So if it's good enough for Lars von Trier, then it's good enough for Liam Regan.
When can people hope to get that beautiful Blu-ray version of it?
Yeah, well, I'm planning November. So I've just done the Indiegogo for the post-production for Eating Miss Campbell. And one of the picks was the My Bloody Banjo Blu-ray, which comes with a director's cut and a festival cut. Two completely different cuts. With Banjo, it was very much rushed for Fright Fest. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, there were a lot of politics involved. I wasn't in the edit. And this isn't me just saying, oh, well, you know, I've... In the past 7 years, I've made it the film it should have been when I was a naive young boy. Now, there was a lot of politics involved. And I feel like now it looks good. I mean, it actually has a grade now, where beforehand, I think it was just like an automatic LUT for the export. So, but anyway, that's the past. And this is the future. Eating Miss Campbell. I think people are going to like it. It's got characters from Banjo. So even if you've never seen Banjo, it works in a standalone film too. And it also references a lot of like independent films and like just filmmaking tropes. And it's very much inspired like films like Heathers, Mean Girls, Jawbreaker, Tragedy Girl. So it's that kind of like dark teen comedy with a lot of satire. But yeah, I hope people like it.
In your summing up of what it was, I'm interested for you for a list that includes, as you said, commenting on things like school shootings, bullying. But then you also say, and veganism. I mean, is veganism that controversial in comparison?
Wait, it's not. No. Oh, well, yeah, maybe. I mean, all my friends are now vegan, which I think is fantastic. And I think ethically, it's brilliant. I'm a meat eater. But the film itself, I think it's more about the moral dilemmas of what a vegan goes through, where they have this taste for human flesh, but they don't want to. But I think they're trying to justify, is it okay to kill something if they're evil and then consume it? So it's kind of like a moral stance on veganism versus meat eaters, and you know, but you know, it doesn't make fun of veganism because I think it's a great cause. I try not to eat as much meat these days just because I watch a lot of documentaries of, you know, factory farming, etc. But you know, if you're a vegan, you're gonna love it. I'm not going to say that. It's just a very, to me, it's just me having fun. I miss films that are social satires. I don't think you see many these days. I mean, the only kind of social satire that's on TV right now is like South Park. And I feel like South Park, they kind of just make fun of everything. And it's not political, as in they don't like, it's not a left-leaning show. It's not a right-leaning show. It's more of a centralist kind of thing. And, you know, I think with Eating Miss Campbell, I'm just like pointing fun and making fun of conventions, as well as, you know, the horror movie tropes of having like the school jock, the mean girls, the token goth girl, and then obviously bringing the school shooting element into it, just to show how ridiculous it is that it's easy to get guns in America. So it's kind of like a British school, but the Americans have come in and to make... for the school to make money again, they sell the rights to live stream an all-you-can-eat massacre event, meaning that the winner of the all-you-can-eat massacre either gets to choose whether to kill themselves or to shoot up their school. And it's really a commentary of, you know, tragedies. The idea that Columbine was like years ago, and we're doing 2022 right now, and we're still hearing about massacres, school massacres in America. I don't want to get political about this whatsoever, but it's very disturbing.
It's a subject that isn't going to go away, is it? I mean, I watched Nitram the other day, which is Justin Kurzel's moving film about what creates the monster that does the shooting. And is clearly a very angry film about the fact that lots of people have needlessly owned guns, and that guns are clearly a problem in terms of shooting, because you take the guns out of the equation, there isn't the ability to shoot people. I mean, it seems quite straightforward to me, but I'm not a gun nut, so that may be where I differ to the people that want to keep guns. What I should add is, Eaton Miss Campbell, if you're listening to this prior to Fright Fest, it's playing Friday the 26th at 9 o'clock in the Discovery Screen 2, which is in the Prince Charles. People going to the festival will know where that is. I will put links in the show notes. And if you're listening to this in the future, there will be links to how you can watch this film. Right then, moving on to five great trauma films.
Yay!
Now, the rules are simple. You've given me five films. The format is 5 times 5, which is 5 films, 5 minutes to discuss each film. And for the new listener to the podcast who's come to this show, then what will happen is, at the end of 5 minutes, a dog will bark. Some of you are saying, obviously it would, but yeah, a dog barks 5 minutes to alarm me that 5 minutes are up, because essentially I'm a passive-aggressive host who doesn't like to interrupt and say your 5 minutes are up. So I let my phone do it, and then I let the guest realise that 5 minutes are up. What that doesn't mean, though, is you have to shut up the minute the dog barks. I mean, by all means, finish your thought. And often it can... And if the conversation is going that way, I'll let it run. It's more for me to not allow, like, one film to be talked about for 25 minutes, and then we go, and there's 4 other films on the list. Okay. Does that make sense to you, Liam?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll start off with 1976's Bloodsucking Freaks, which I can tell you is a film that was banned, I think, when I tried to watch it in the UK in the 80s. And in the mid-90s, I got to see it in the States, because I was blown away by the fact that in America, there was this ability to release the film with no certification. It just couldn't be a mainstream, it couldn't be sold through mainstream places as easy. That was it. So that was the rule in Britain. If you didn't get certification, you couldn't sell it in the mass market, which is kind of insane. But I wanted to, each one I'm going to give, because obviously trauma is a particular type of film in a macro sense. I just want to draw on little bits of what critics have said. So for each film, I've picked a little quote. So for Bloodsucking Freaks, Rob Wrigley even, of ClassicHorror.com said, "As a cultural artifact and as an example of the worst uses of creative energy, however, Bloodsucking Freaks is a must-see. Just remember, if you are offended by it, the joke is on you."
Is she dead, Master?
Not quite.
She died, no new show.
I know, idiot.
Liam, tell me about Bloodsucking Freaks. What? How did you come to this film?
Back in 1998, the early days of the internet, I guess, I ordered 2 DVDs, Trauma's War and Cannibal the Musical. And
you must mean 1998, not 1988.
Oh, I'm sorry, 1998, sorry.
I was going to say, if you're on the internet in 1988, I want to know what time machine you're in.
1998, a glorious year. So I got 2 DVDs from Trauma. It took ages for them to come. I don't know what happened. I don't know if they lost all the orders or whatever, but they took the money. And I think in the late 90s, when you bought something off the internet, it was more of a kind of risk, right?
Yeah, it was like a trust exercise.
I don't know.
It was a trust
completely.
Exercise.
So 4 months later, I get this big box delivered to my house, and I'm like, who's this from? And it's from Trauma. And they not only put in Cannibal the Musical and Trauma's, I think it was Cannibal the Musical and Trauma's War I ordered, but they also gave me like 6 other DVD titles and a t-shirt and a VHS. Anyway, one of those DVD titles, and I've still got it today, is Bloodsucking Freaks. And I always heard of the title, and I always saw the images in Dark Side magazine, because I used to buy Dark Side magazine a lot in the 90s. And you know, I watched it one night. So in 1988, I must have been like 13 years old. And I've never seen anything quite like it before. And it's a great commentary on the artist versus the critic, along with a midget called Ralphus. And I mean, looking at the film, it's an extremely misogynistic film. Mm. But I feel like there's more going on with it, with the idea that an artist doing all this work, Sadhu. So we follow Sadhu, who has this kind of torture show, and he has a midget called Ralphus, and there's one of the critics who gives him a bad review. So he then kidnaps the critic and essentially makes him part of the show. And I think there's more going on with the film than the actual torture, if you can look past that. And it's very well made. And funnily enough, the DVD has an audio commentary by Eli Roth.
Really?
And now this is like, So this is pre-Cabin Fever Eli Roth. So Eli, he interned at the Trauma Building, I think for a year in like 97, 98. And the funny story is that the director, Joel M. Reed, Trauma reached out and asked him to do the audio commentary, and Joel wanted $100, and Trauma said no. So they got Eli, who was an intern at the time, an unpaid intern, say, hey, you like this film, do the audio commentary. So, you know, when I listened to that when I was like 13 years old, and I'm like, oh shit, this guy who did the audio commentary has got a film coming out called Cabin Fever. And then now look at him.
The rest is history, as you say. That's amazing.
The rest is history. I mean, interestingly enough, Blood Sucking Freaks is now available over here by, I think, H8 Films released it. And I feel it's uncut, which I'm really surprised with. There's a cool scene at the end with a cock sandwich.
Is availability now more a reflection of the fact that, A, it's not as shocking as it once was, and B, the effects are not exactly convincing in the way that, you know, we might be used to seeing these days? You know, the schlocky bloody violence is literally that now. The censors, as it were, have allowed themselves that wriggle room that if it looks schlocky, it is schlocky.
Completely. And, you know, I think it's all about the tone as well. I think it's many factors. However, you know, I would argue that, like, with society now, I think it's more probably offensive these days in some respects, just because it is extremely misogynistic. But I don't think it's a mean-spirited film. I think you can have a lot of fun, and like you say, it is extremely schlocky at the same time.
Hmm.
And even though I own the Blu-ray release and the DVD, there's something about watching a compressed version on DVD that makes it much more seedier than the Blu-ray transfer.
Well, I've come across a website called badmovies.org, and in that, there goes the dog. Maybe we'll never know about what that's.
Oh,
and it's interesting. I didn't look at the other one whether he'd covered the others, but for Bloodsucking Freaks, he does a plot summary, and then he goes, things I learned from this movie. Sadistic midgets carrying hacksaws are really bad news. Sadists use naked girls' backsides for dartboards. Mass nudity can improve any movie. Chainsaws sound like electric knives. I thought these are kind of interesting. I mean, it's not Roger Ebert, is it? But it's an interesting summary of a film.
Most certainly. But no, I recommend anyone to check it out. I think it's one of those kind of like video nasties. I think originally it was going to be called The Incredible. I think it was the original title was The Incredible Torture Show, I think. But yeah, I recommend everyone to check it out. You'll never forget it.
Shooting into the 80s to 1984, the next film on your list is Combat Shock, which my friend, Anton Pidel, he wrote, Combat Shock is a downbeat, depressing film dripping with persistent pessimism that runs counter to the prevailing Reaganite ideology of the day. For here, instead of conspicuous affluism and yuppieism, we get an alternative view of street-level life on the destitute, desperate margins of 80s America, comparable to the hell of war itself.
The fighting. kill him. The maiden.
How did you come in contact with Combat Shock? Where does it start for you?
That was one of those DVDs that came in the same box as Bloodsucking Freaks. So again, 13 years old. And I loved everything about Combat Shock. So I think Combat Shock was probably one of the first films, maybe Bad Taste as well, where I could tell that it looked different. And what I'm referring to there is a Super 16mm. Look to the film, and it's shot in New York. It's so gritty, it's so dirty, and you know, the older I became, I watched films such as like Taxi Driver and Eraserhead, and I can completely tell what Buddy Giovinazzi, the director of the film, was going for. But there's just something so nihilistic about the film. And it's still got a lot of power today. In fact, when I was in college, when I was studying media and context, I actually stood up and presented not a thesis. It was like a half an hour talk on Combat Shock. And, you know, back then I was able to, I guess I can still do it now, but I just don't. You know, when you can hook up a SCART from a DVD to a VHS and you can record shit. And I don't want to call it bootlegging because I wasn't selling anything. But, so I showed them a scene at the end, because there's a scene at the end where he, don't want to spoil it for anybody, but he takes out milk, a carton of milk from the fridge, and he pours the carton of milk, the lead protagonist in the film. And the milk goes sour. So the milk is sour. It's very lumpy milk. And he drinks it. And then something just comes over him that... I'm not going to spoil it, because I know if I say the next thing, it's just going to ruin the whole film. What I remember distinctively that I said in media and context was, oh yeah, the milk dripped down to his Converse shoes. And, the milk is supposed to represent purity. And there's no more purity in his life, which is why it's sour. You know, like when you kind of like just make up a lot of bullshit from mainstream context. But hey, I was able to convince a lot of people I knew what the hell I was talking about. But the film is brilliant. And I mean, if anything, I've always wanted to shoot on Super 16mm. I have Kodak film stock. However, and each 16mm Kodak film stock is like 11 minutes per reel or something.
Yeah.
The issue is, Stuart, is when you try to get that shit processed and then transfer to digital, it costs so much. It just costs so much fucking money. And you've got to have the discipline.
Mm.
And you look at something like Combat Shock, and it's like, you can tell it's very micro budget. But the guy had the discipline to, get the shots he needed. And when you listen to the audio commentary, they had no money whatsoever. In fact, the audio commentary, Buddy Giovinazzi does it with the director of Necromantic.
Jörg Ball, right?
Yes, that's right, yeah. And again, that's another DVD audio commentary that I recommend. I think the film's available on Arrow DVD over here. I don't think it's definitely not had a Blu-ray release. But I have the Severin Blu-ray, where they were only able to make 2,000 due to the contract with Troma. And I just remember and I rewatched it, I think, in 2018. And I just remember falling in love with the film again. You know, just wow. I the sound. It's have you seen it, Stuart?
It's one I've not heard of till coming across your list.
I think when people think of Troma, they think of Toxic Avenger, they think of Tromeo and Juliet, but Combat Shock is like a straight-laced, nihilistic, nasty movie.
Yeah. No, it sounds like my cup of tea.
Yeah, man. I think you'd love it. I think you really, really would love it. Like I say, Taxi Driver meets Eraserhead is probably the best way to describe it.
There goes the dog.
No, there we go.
For your third choice, we're just jumping a couple of years into 1987. And to be honest with you, it's interesting that you said that people know Troma for Toxic Avenger and Troma and Juliet. I've seen Toxic Avenger, but I think when I saw it originally, it was so out of context that I just saw it as a film, because I just got it, from the video shop. I didn't I wasn't aware of Troma, this kind of trash cinema brand that would throw buckets of blood at everything. But late night TV of the late 80s and maybe probably early 90s, Surf Nazis Must Die from 1987 was on a lot. And that became, I'm trying to think, I want to say it was the Horror Channel, but it can't have been. But it must have been a prototype, whatever came before, maybe in Sci-Fi Channel or something like that.
Was it Bravo?
Bravo, that'll be it. Yeah, yeah, Bravo. I was just trying to think. I couldn't think what the channel was on.
I have a tattoo right here.
So to me, that's what I think of Troma. I think of Surf Nazis Must Die, which is your third choice. And what's interesting is that it was the only one of the five choices you gave me when I was looking for critics to try and find, to get a quote from. I'm like, hold on a minute, Salon.com, that's pretty heavyweight for a Troma. So in that one, you've got the David Lazarus from Salon.com concluded, Surf Nazis Must Die is the sort of film Ed Wood might have made if he was active today, except he'd be the only one in on the joke. Does that resonate? I think that's meant in good spirit. I don't think that's meant to be mean. I don't think he's being like snotty nosed about it. I think
no, not at all. I mean, like, so Surf Nazis Must Die. I think whenever you hear that title, you have this vision of what the film is.
It's Texas Chainsaw Massacre, isn't it? It's just it's got everything. Every word is loaded.
Exactly. I mean, the original title was Surf Nazis, which Lloyd and Michael took to Cannes to sell in like the mid 80s. And obviously with a title like Surf Nazis, it sounds very, well, it could be interpreted as pro-Nazi, right?
Well, in a country that was occupied by Nazis, it would be, yeah.
Completely, yeah. So adding the must die to it, I just think, when you say to somebody, Surf Nazis Must Die, what a title, right?
It is.
If anything, the issue with it, Stuart, is that when you hear that title, I don't think the film could ever deliver.
No.
What I mean by that is I love the movie so much, but you expect a different kind of film, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
What's this all about, Kraut?
Sand. We're not getting the most out of it.
I know the coast in my bones, and its potential has never been greater, but we need to work together. My way. Nazi battleships will be patrolling the whole coast soon. Forget about individual colors. Forget about gang territory. We need to centralize power. We need to pull together. Under the sign of the swastika!
Adolf, no! You couldn't handle the power!
I mean, I am in that camp of the title sold me.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin Marshall credit card bill.
And it didn't do what the title promises. So what is it that makes it a good film for you as part of the Troma catalogue?
To me, I think I love it because it takes itself so seriously. There's really no comedy in the film. It's a very kind of post, it's kind of like a, not like a post-apocalyptic, but kind of like it's set like in the future somewhere. And it's got this awesome industrial soundtrack, which I think was released on vinyl like maybe a few years ago. Beautiful, beautiful industrial soundtrack. And you know, one, you know, you've got some really awesome surf footage. Each Nazi character, like Adolf, Mengele, Eve, Hook, like each character is very different. And then, you know, so it's with surf Nazis, it's so in the 80s or whenever it's set, there's a bunch of like surf cliques, like there's the tidal waves, there's what are the other names? But anyway, surf Nazis is one of them, and they're ruling every single surf clique, right? They're like, we're the master of the beaches. And like, you know, they kind of plow down everybody's mama. Now they kill Leroy on the beach. You know, this black dude. And when Leroy's mother's in a retirement home, and when she hears that he's, you know, being killed, she takes it upon herself to find out who's done it. And it's kind of like this like 6-year-old woman against the, you know, these fascists. It's so good. Now that does sound comedic, but I think what works with the film, Stuart, I think what makes the film so good is that it kind of embraces not the absurdity, but it plays it straight. And I think that's what makes it more powerful. It doesn't make it funny. It just makes it really powerful. And, you know, a lot of trauma films, they're very tongue-in-cheek, they're very meta. And I think when you hear Surf Nazis Must Die, you look at the poster and, you know, you've got this idea of what the film should be, but it's kind of like a 180. Mm. You know, it's kind of like you kind of, it's like the bait and switch. I mean, what's your thoughts on the film?
I don't think I was sophisticated enough to sort of see it on that level. I wanted tongue-in-cheek and I wanted more of the kind of schlockiness, but the schlockiness isn't there in the same way it is on traditional trauma films, for a better expression.
Completely. Yeah. I mean, were you a fan of the movie, or do you think that, like, the films couldn't live up to the title? Because that's one thing I've heard many people say.
I'm a fan of the idea of it. If that makes sense. I think the spirit the spirit was made in, and like, you know, in exploitation cinema, nailing a title like Surf Nazis Must Die, you've kind of won bingo, haven't you? In terms of, you know, it lights up the, I'm aware of this kind of thing. People are aware of this film that don't know what trauma is from an apple, but this film, you know, this title is so
completely
great. And probably thanks certainly in the UK down to things like Bravo it was on all the time. It wasn't just on once. It was almost on, you know, every Friday. And I feel like the way you've described it is that maybe I'm due a revisit, because in a sense, I feel I could probably watch it for that straight face. Cause that's something I like about cinema now, is like where you play straight what is ridiculous. It shouldn't be played straight. And that's suddenly where you as an audience begin to take note, because you're not, you know, you're expecting people to just wink at the camera or whatever. And if they don't, you're kind of like, why are they not winking at the camera? This is ridiculous.
Exactly. And it's one of those things where all the filmmakers and everyone creating it must have felt like they were creating a piece of art in a way, you know, with a title like Surf Nazis. What I would recommend is H8 Films did a beautiful 2K transfer a few years ago, and I recommend just to watch that, because it just brings the film to life. It really gives the film just a new lease on life, should I say, with the 2K transfer.
Right then, your fourth choice is probably features the most famous name involved with it in terms of legacy. I mean, Eli Roth is a legacy, but that's somebody who worked on the commentary of a film. But in terms of directing a film on trauma, I checked through all the others, and you know, they've had careers, or to a lesser or greater degree, but Cannibal the Musical from 1993 is directed by Trey Parker, which is obviously one of the co-creators of South Park. I went back to classichorror.com for a quote, a writer called Jen DeLugas. She said, "I could go on about the amateur screenshots, poor cuts and very obvious continuity issues, but this is a film that you just don't care. And if you do care, it's probably not for you." Which I feel like that could be like on the poster of every single trauma film in some senses.
Cannibal the Musical, so I used to visit the Trauma website in 1996, and I think in 1997 they mentioned from the creators of South Park, and you know, South Park wasn't introduced to the UK until April 98 or something like that. So I was like, oh, what's this new film that Trauma has? And then Channel 4, during Series 2 of South Park, had a South Park night, and they screened Cannibal Musical. So I'm like, oh, great, this is the film I've seen on Trauma.com. And I'm a huge fan of musicals. Like, so, you know, as a kid, my mom and dad would take me to the West End to see all the Andrew Lloyd Webber musicals. Like, Starlight Express was the first musical I ever saw.
Wow.
The new Starlight Express, yeah. And, you know, I've seen Blood Brothers a million times. So I've always been like a musical kid. So Cannibal the Musical to me was just... I find with musicals, the more you watch them, the better they become. Because, you know the songs, you know every single beat, etc. And with Cannibal the Musical, even though Trey Parker made that in film school, obviously had investors involved, etc. Mm-hmm. But they had access to equipment. It's such a, what's the word? It feels like for me anyway, it feels like a real movie. It's such an accomplished film, should I say. The original title was Alfred Packer, the Musical, and it was originally distributed over here on VHS by an indie VHS label called Screen Edge. Do you remember Screen Edge?
I remember it coming out on screen. I was trying to Google while you were talking. It's, yeah, I remember that being it, because they were obviously trying to use the South Park to sell it, and it was really underground, Screen Edge, yeah.
Oh, completely. Yeah, I think they put out stuff like The Dead Next Door, and they put out Shattered Dead, and you know, some of the titles. But yeah, like when I saw that on Channel 4, I couldn't get enough of it. I thought it was fantastic. And then soon after, I rented Orgasmo, and then obviously the Zucker Brothers made Basketball, which featured Trey Parker and Matt Stone, and obviously the South Park movie. And you know, it felt like the late 90s. Whenever I think of the late 90s, I just think like Trey Parker, Kevin Smith, Trauma, you know. But Cannibal Musical is just so funny. It's not a gory film. Now, there is gore in the film at the front of the movie, but apart from that, the title called Cannibal the Musical, it's a pretty straight-laced film when it comes to gore, that is. But the songs are just so catchy. And, you know, you could tell Trey was musically talented because, you know, he went on from doing that to then he did the South Park movie to Book of Mormon. So, you know, I assume you've seen Cannibal the Musical.
A long time ago. So it's not one that's in the memory banks, if I'm honest with you.
I always say it's probably one of the most accessible trauma films. So if someone asks me, okay, recommend me a trauma film,
yeah,
I'll probably say Romeo and Juliet, Cannibal the Musical, or maybe Poltergeist, which is also a musical.
Of course.
But yeah, so to me, you know, Trey Parker is one of those great filmmakers where he's only made like a handful of movies, but I feel like every single one, he's, you know, he's knocked it out of the park. And it's really weird because Cannibal Musical, I don't think it has any UK distribution. And I know that Trauma don't have the print to put it to Blu-ray. So it's only available on DVD or the Trauma Now app. But, you know, I completely recommend it. In fact, I'm actually going to Denver, Colorado next month. There's a South Park concert. with Primus, Ween, Trey and Matt. And 2 days beforehand, they're doing a Cannibal the Musical and Orgasmo screening with the producer, Jason McHugh, and Dian Bahar, who stars in both. So it'd be cool to see that on the big screen. I just thought I'd drop that in there. I'm off to Denver. I'm off to the South Park concert. I love Ween so much, but they never come to the UK. And Primus just cancelled their fucking Rush concert. So it's like, fuck it, I'll go over.
Well, if you don't mind, if you indulge me for a second then, I was lucky enough the dog's about to bark. I was lucky enough to see Ween when they toured the Pod album.
No way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Where they spent 20 minutes laughing because somebody farted and they'd been drinking Newcastle Brown having curry on the previous day. I saw them in Birmingham at Edwards Number 8, which is a tiny, tiny venue, sort of. And sadly, it was, you know, there was only 20 of us there to watch the show. I mean, this is when because that's on Shimmy Disc, and Kramer played bass with the band on the tour. So you've got Kramer with
right,
Ween.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, it's one of the best things I've ever seen. And I was lucky enough to see them, since I lived in London, I saw them play at Shepherd's Bush Empire, which was quite phenomenal. I don't think I've ever been.
Wow.
Was it the Astoria? It might have been the Astoria, actually. But it was amazing I've been there since God Ween Satan. You know, I remember buying it in a record shop in Halifax, and the record shop owner saying to me, it's a bit odd, that album, you know. And I was like thinking, yeah, that's why I bought it. I want the oddness of it. But I think, in a funny way, there's a sharing of passion for creating lots of stuff, which you could draw a line between Troma and Ween and possibly Primus as well. Even, you know, it's always what you always get the sense they're making or producing what they want, not what they think the world needs.
Completely, yeah. And, you know, I like this idea, just as a sidebar, I think that's why I love Troma so much. I mean, Lloyd could have easily worked in the industry. I mean, he has worked on Rocky, and he worked on Saturday Night Fever. Rocky was edited at the old Troma building in
really?
Hell's Kitchen. John G. Avildsen, Derek, obviously, you know, Rocky, Lloyd, really good friends. And Lloyd's got a cameo in Rocky. He's the part where Rocky picks up a homeless guy and takes him into the, I think it's a cafe or a restaurant or bar. And that's Lloyd.
No.
Lloyd
that's
was
amazing.
So Lloyd was the production manager on, in fact, John G. Avildsen mentions Lloyd in his Oscar speech. So yeah, it's kind of cool to, you know, a little cool trivia right there. But yeah, just to go back, like, I think what I love about Troma is that Lloyd could have worked in the industry, but instead he creates the films he wants to make. And, you know, with Banjo and crap, you know, no one's ever going to make Banjo. So I saved up and, you know, I did it myself. And I feel like I'm always going to do that just because I'm such a control freak. And I always feel like, I remember the experience of Banjo being censored and having to change the title and the poster and all this kind of stuff with the US distributor. And I'm like, do I really want to go through that? I mean, that happens in so many different territories and markets. I get that. Mm. But at the same time, it's like, you know, if I can just put out my version in the UK, you know, and give it a festival run, then, you know, whatever happens, happens. But at least my version's out there. But yeah, sorry, that was just a sidebar why I love Troma so much, because they are truly independent. And Lloyd's like the nicest guy. And it's so weird to think that, you know, he's the reason why I got into filmmaking. I've loved Troma since I was 11 years old, since watching Toxic Avenger Part 2. And now, like, to have Lloyd produce Ian Miss Campbell and, you know, being a friend, you know, staying at his house and, you know, just it's so surreal to me, Stuart, that like 11-year-old me would not believe any of the shit, you know.
Well, I guess as well, you're proving the old adage wrong of never meet your heroes. Clearly meeting your hero has been a good thing.
Oh, completely, man. Yeah, without a doubt, he is the best. And so funny as well. And you know, and also the Toxic Avenger remake's due out this year. It's been finished. Legendary Pictures has created it, and it's got Elijah Wood, Kevin Bacon, and Peter Dinklage. And I hope to God that puts like a brand new light on Troma.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not had for many years, unfortunately. But yeah, so that was just a sidebar.
No, sidebar away. That was really interesting. Right then, your fifth choice is The End of the Century, 1999's Fatty Drives the Bus, which, I'll be honest with you, I had never heard of this at all, so this is going to be interesting for me.
You want an apple, 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 you want an apple.
I want an apple.
I have one right here.
Testament to how maybe little known this film is, there are only two reviews that I could find. Via IMDb, you know, all the other four films, I could have chosen a multitude of reviews. There were two reviews I could choose from, and I went for Gordon Maples of misanthropy.com, where he says, Fatty Drives the Bus is not a good movie in any conventional sense of the term, but there is some strange enjoyment to be had out of it.
I think that's such a fair, you know, description of the film. It is so wacky. And the only reason I discovered it is, you know, back in 2005, the peak of DVD, you know, the peak of DVD. I dropped out of college. I just didn't go back to my third year. No, university. I didn't go back to my third year of university because, I was an idiot that liked to drink back then and party. Anyway, I got a job. I got a full-time job. And, you know, I had at an expendable income. I could just like buy whatever I wanted. So when I discovered ebay.com and found that I could buy DVDs really cheap, I must have bulk bought 60 Trauma DVDs. It all came in a big box. You know, I just got like everything. And one of them was Fire Drives the Bus. And I'm like, well, that's a funny title. I have zero idea what it's about. And the first time I watched it, I didn't get it. You know, there's some films that I'll watch first time, I just don't understand. Like Anchorman is one film I really didn't like the first time around. I don't know why, it just didn't click. Second time around, oh my God, this is genius. And Fire Drives the Bus is very similar. It's created by a comedy troupe that hasn't really done anything since Fire Drives the Bus. And it's about how the devil comes down to Earth and he takes over this bus tour. And it's so messed up and weird. There's not so much a linear narrative, but much like a Monty Python movie, like something like Meaning of Life, where it has kind of like a narrative thread, but it's more of like sketch parts. That's what Fire Drives the Bus is, and it's a film that not many people have seen or heard of. I remember when I started working for Trauma when I went over to New York to work on Return to Newcombe High, and you know, everyone on that set were Trauma fans, and we'd talk about what our favorite Trauma films were, and everyone that were there, it was always the deep cuts that it wasn't just Toxic Avenger, Trevi or Juliet. You know, Zach Amico, one of the stars, mentioned Fatty Drives the Bus. And I'm like, oh my God, Fatty Drives the Bus. And it felt so good to me that I was able to mention that title to somebody else. And someone else knew exactly what the fuck I was talking about. And it wasn't just like me, you know, because it's hard to kind of show people trauma films sometimes, because especially these days, because people are so used to what's out in the cinema and then what's out on Netflix. And obviously Trauma is very much of a low production value. And a lot of their golden era films are from many years ago. And now everything's digital. And that's just another thing I'll mention, is that the digital revolution is fantastic. I would never have been able to be a filmmaker, Stuart, if it was just film still. You know, I think it'd make it much harder. But the problem is now is anyone can make a film. Mm. Anyone can make a film. But it's so hard to stand out. And I think what I love about Fatty Drives the Bus came out in the late 90s, shot on Super 16mm. They could have done something conventional. They could have done something mainstream. It's a movie that you can't really market. And with a title like that, which I find it's so genius, because there's a bus driver. Okay, so right, there's a driver that doesn't even have a name. He's just fat. And he drives the bus. It has nothing to do with the film. He drives the bus. And it's genius. I recommend, Stuart, that you check it out. Now, a bit of a plug right now. Trauma Now, first month free, watch.trauma.com. check out Fatty Drives the Bus. Anyone that's listening to this, there's always a free month on Trauma on watch.trauma.com. You can download the app onto Fire Stick. Watch Fatty Drives the Bus and message me and then tell me how much you hate it and how much, Liam, you've wasted 90 minutes of my life. But I'll be like, but that's 90 minutes that you can say, hey, I watch Fatty Drives the Bus. In fact, I'm sure that if anyone like suddenly passes away and their life flashes before their eyes, those 90 minutes of Fatty Drives the Bus will flash back because you'll never forget it.
Well, just to give us a taste then, what would be something that's outlandish in it? You know, what was a bold idea that they did in that film that really resonates with you?
I think it's a very theatrical film. What I mean by that is that they create hell on this kind of like stage, mm-hmm. and it's very kind of, I don't want to call high school, but it's very kind of cheap, but it kind of works at the same time. It's so bizarre. Like the whole thing is just, it has to be seen to be believed. It's so surreal.
Right then, that's five great trauma films. Thank you very much. I'm going to run through the list for those that weren't paying attention. We've got Bloodsucking Freaks from 1976. We've got Combat Shock from 1984. We've got Surf Nazis Must Die from 87. Cannibal, the musical from 1993. And Fatty Drives the Bus from 1999.
Now, those are five great trauma movies, and I purposely didn't mention any of Lloyd's films because they're all masterpieces in their own right. But I wanted to give people, I mean, I'm sure people have heard of Surf Nazis Must Die, but I bet no one's heard of Fatty Drives the Bus. So.
No, I include myself in that, as I say. So I think you do a good service by pointing out, because I think your enthusiasm for them is as valuable as being told they exist. You know, I think when people, if you can tap into why people like stuff, often that means you can watch it with that in mind. It's not, because if you go, I'm going to watch a good film, and then you put Fatty Drives the Bus on, that can come with its own expectations that aren't going to be met. But if you watch it with, I guess you've got to, I mean, there's only way to watch a trauma film in many senses is with a certain squinted look in your eye while you look at it. You're not going to look at it hard.
Completely.
But then I think as well, though, because of the boldness of a lot of them, they do end up, and I mean, I guess a stopwatch is right twice a day as well, like, but they do end up making points, and because they've made stuff up, they've made so much, there's been so much made over a long, a sustained period of time, they become a commentary on where we were. I mean, I think Anton's comments about Combat Shock, for example, you know, referencing Reaganite America, you know, there's clearly something to be said. It might not be saying it like wagging its finger at you, but clearly that's the context when the film was made.
Completely. And, you know, Poltergeist is about the fast food industry. Trauma's War is about Reagan politics. Romeo and Juliet, it was how many years of Shakespeare that we're celebrating at that time. You know, Toxic Avengers, commentary on obviously toxic waste barrels all over America. You know, Shakespeare, the latest one, hashtag Shakespeare Shitstorm, that's about social justice warriors and how it's easy to be cancelled. But it's also, you know, it's essentially an updated version of Shakespeare's Tempest, but just played, in current day. It's very good. If it ever comes to the UK, which I think Lloyd's going to be doing a UK tour of it hopefully later this year, you should come see it, Stuart, you know. I think you'd like it.
Well, look, and to bring us full circle, you've made a new film, Eating Miss Campbell, which will premiere in at Frightfest in August 2022, depending on when people listen to this podcast. I'll put links in the show notes for those that are listening to it with time to go see it. And hopefully, for those that don't, I'll give links to Refuse Films where people can buy the film in the future.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Stuart. I really appreciate that. And thank you for having me on again. It's really weird. I've got to rehearse my press junket for Eat Miss Campbell, because when it's someone out and it's all these million things, you know, with banjo it's easy. It's like, oh, it's about a guy that snaps the banjo string on his penis and he conjures an imaginary friend. Boom. Eat Miss Campbell, it's about a million different things. And so I've really got to rehearse that. I've really got to rehearse it. But I'll get to it. You're the first person I've spoke about it, Stuart. So I'm like, it's about school massacres. It's about veganism. It's about blah, 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 blah. But yeah.
Well, look, I feel privileged to have got the spitball version. It just gives me to say thank you very much for giving your time on the Britflix podcast.
No, thank you so much, Stuart. And hopefully there'll be a third time, you know. maybe in the next 7 or 8 years. Yeah.
Well, if I'm still doing podcasts, then you'll be very welcome.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, Beth, would you eat me?
My name is Beth Connor, and for the past 17 years, my life has gone straight to video.
On-demand streaming channels will pay a handsome 7 figures for an, gee whiz, a school shooting.
This school is enabling school massacres by allowing students to choose between either killing their friends or killing themselves.
Planning on inviting Miss Campbell to the We Can Eat Massacre contest.
You know, if you don't have a boner for Miss Campbell, you could always attend to mine.
For lack of a better term, problematic.
Z-Kyle!
What is this bullshit?
Well, that's one way to deal with unruly students dressed as former presidents.
Together, we could rid the world of this toxic, self-appointed patriarchy that served nothing to womankind but pain and grief.
And what is more poetic and American than a high school massacre?
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.